Dr. Pierce.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's have we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, we have 6 council members absent, so they lose. All right. This is a presentation by me as chair of the Pelagic Committee, with the focus being small mesh species, whiting, red hake, offshore hake. We're not talking about sea herring, although there is a tab in your binder that is specific to sea herring. Sea herring is part of the Pelagic Committee. You can refer to that if you haven't already done so yesterday regarding some issues that relate to the sea herring fishery. Also, it's not about dogfish. There is a document in your binder that does relate to dogfish, however. It's a letter that I wrote that was sent to Robert Gable, acting chief of the branch of CITES operation, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. You may have referred to that yesterday regarding CITES and dogfish, and I addressed some questions regarding the status of dogfish and management of dogfish. But today it's whiting, red hake, and the offshore hake. I refer you to tab 6, which has all of the information we require for our discussions here today, and there is no action scheduled, so keep that in mind. This is more of an update as to our progress. Also, you need to refer to the executive committee meeting summary that was reviewed yesterday. I assume that's number 10, document number 10 in the correspondence and reports part of your binder. And I refer you to number 10 in that document, where there are some executive committee recommendations regarding whiting stock status and management, and I'll reference them quite soon. Specifically, they relate to what to do with the data poor situation, data poor stocks. The the purpose of this meeting, this is a particular presentation, is to focus primarily on updated stock status information for those three species that make up the small mesh multi-species stock. Also, if there is any additional guidance this council wishes to provide to the Pelagics Committee, specifically the Whiting Committee, if you care to provide any additional guidance regarding the development of our amendment, then you need to provide that today. To refresh your memory, at our last council meeting, November 16, we did have a great deal of discussion regarding the work of the committee, specifically the objectives that we wanted the council to consider, and indeed the council did approve specific objectives that will guide the committee as we continue our work. We do have a meeting scheduled for later on this month, so we'll be getting back to our workload for the development of this amendment very soon. The objectives are fivefold: prevent excess capacity in the harvesting sector of the fishery, maintain fishing mortality at acceptable levels, and we have 3 options, really, at this point in time to deal with that, options that this council has approved for us to pursue to further develop. One option is trip limits and mesh. The next option is hard TACs, and then the final option would be soft TACs. So we have the full range of options to consider regarding maintaining fishing mortality at acceptable levels. The third objective, control fishing mortality on juveniles as appropriate. The fourth is to allow for industry flexibility through dedicated access privileges. And then the fifth is essentially to simplify and improve management of the small mesh fishery through the development of a standalone FMP, and there was a great deal of support for these objectives. The council voted 15-0 to move us forward in that direction. So, indeed, we will. before Lori, who is now the council staffer working to support committee activities, before she gives a presentation regarding the stock status of a small mesh multi-species, I will make a relatively simple statement and see if the council agrees. And if you do agree, then I'll consider it to be council support for our moving forward in this direction. And here's where I'm referencing the executive committee recommendations. Item 10 in the document I referred to earlier, and that is, unless the council objects, I intend to move forward with the committee to, as it says in number 10, focus on continuing the development of the amendment, including limited access and a procedure for setting TACs with limited information. Also, if the council does not object, we will consider any information that comes from the National Marine Fisheries Service Working Group on Data Poor Stocks. That's the meeting that's scheduled in June. It likely will be a very important meeting, I believe, invited. It's by invitation only. I could be wrong. There perhaps has been some rethinking about that, but as I understand, it's by invitation. So this group will do some very important legwork, groundwork, to assist this council determine how indeed we might want to move forward when with improved management or management of all these different species that we manage, when indeed we're working in a data-poor environment. And I think most of us fully appreciate that there are many instances where we are working in a data-poor environment, and certainly that's the situation for small mesh multi-species. So, again, we can talk about this after with Laurie's through with the presentation, but unless I'm given further guidance by the council, I intend to have the committee, you know, move forward to pursue those particular points. All right. Laurie also will provide a draft timeline for the amendment, and therefore you'll be in a position to understand the benchmarks, the kinds of progress we will make, and by what time. With that said, I think that covers all of the information I wanted to review before Lori's presentation. So, Lori, if you will, provide us with that update on stock status.
Thank you. I will keep this very brief. The presentation slides that I'm going to run through are all, they're all provided as figures for the most part in the updated stock status document, which is behind, what's the tab? Behind tab six, sorry. So I'm just going to be really providing a couple of summary figures from that document, all of the more detailed survey data and all the more detailed information that we have at this time is in that updated stock status document. The first slide is the time series of trawl survey data and landings for the northern stock of silver hake. The northern stock of silver hake is essentially comprises the northern Georges Bank area as well as the Gulf of Maine. And this is the survey points along with the dark line, which is the three-year moving average of the survey. The three-year moving average is what we use in the overfishing definition to account for survey variability. The horizontal dashed line is the threshold for the biomass threshold for being considered overfished, and the horizontal straight line is the biomass target for being considered rebuilt. And as you can see, with the northern stock of silver hake, the survey has taken a downward turn and has been trending downward for several years now. The 2004 and 2005 survey points in particular were quite low. We did have a higher point in 2006. The three-year moving average puts us in the northern stock just barely above the threshold for being considered overfished. This has been a tough tough issue for the PDT to try to deal with at this time because we do have limited information. And as you can see by looking at the trend in landings, the landings have declined to really very low amounts in the northern area. We're at record low levels of landings, and the landings have been down since really the late 1980s. So it's somewhat difficult to really figure out what's going on with this stock. I'll get into that in just a minute. The next slide is the southern stock of Silver Hake, which is Southern Georges Bank in the Mid-Atlantic and southern New England areas. And, again, it's kind of interesting. This stock has taken a turn upwards and is starting to trend upwards in terms of the survey. Again, with landings being very low and consistently low for many, many years now, the stock was considered overfished, as you can see, back in the late 1990s, which is when we developed Amendment 12 in the rebuilding program. And as you can also see, the three-year moving average bumped just above the biomass target, which is the straight, the solid horizontal line, in 2003, at which point the Southern stock actually was considered rebuilt under the Amendment 12 rebuilding program. It has since declined, the survey has since declined below that target, but we're still quite a bit above the threshold. So, I mean, over the time series, things have improved since the implementation of Amendment 12, and this stock is generally trending upwards. Just to summarize, whiting silver hake is really the species of concern when we talk about small mesh multi-species. I'd say more so than red hake and offshore hake at this point. This is just a summary of where we are with the silver hake stocks. Neither are overfished, but as you can see, the threshold is for the northern stock is 3.31, and we're at 3.39. This is very concerning given that we're getting a new survey vessel this year, and it's going to be, this year's survey point and perhaps the next year's are going to be important in terms of really seeing what direction the trend in the northern area is going. Some other problems that the PDT has discussed relative to the Silver Hake stock are things that were identified in the last stock assessment in SAW 42 in November of 2005. Discards in the stock assessment were estimated to be about 4,000 metric tons a year from 2001 to 2004. During that time period, the landings were averaging about 9,300, so discards were around 40 to 50%. But if you look at the 2006 landings, it's 580 plus 4260. The landings have declined to the point where that discard estimate is almost equivalent to what may be landed in this fishery. There's a lot of unknowns about discards, and that's certainly an issue that needs to be explored more. Other things that were noted in the survey that make this particularly difficult is the survey is really the only instrument we have to evaluate the status of the stock right now, and the last stock assessment did note that there have been some changes in whiting distribution, and that may be affecting the catchability of whiting in the survey. They noted a lack of both older and larger fish in the survey. There's some speculation that component of the stock may potentially have moved into an area that's not, currently being sampled by the survey, into deeper water, things like that. There's a lot of concern noted in the stock assessment about the usefulness of the current reference points. It was stated that if there has been a significant shift in the distribution of the fish, then, the survey-based reference points that we're using to evaluate the status of the stock might not be the most appropriate reference points to use. Unfortunately, with no additional information, the stock assessment wasn't able to recommend other reference points. So these are indeed the reference points we're working with. And overall, the stock assessment concluded that the scientific performance of the assessment against the terms of reference were not good. We have some definitely have some data issues and some uncertainty about what really might be going on with the Silver Hake resource, and a lot of uncertainty about how well the or how accurately the survey may be reflecting the actual biomass status of the stock. Just to move very quickly through Red Hake, Northern Red Hake has over time increased. There were some recent declines over the last 3 or 4 years. And again, in 2006, there was another high survey point. So really, we're kind of at a point with the northern stock of Red Hake where we're not overfished, and we really need a couple more years of survey data to see where that line trends, whether it trends upward or downward. I mean, with the last survey point, we're essentially flat and can't really say too much about which way that trend may be going at this point. Again, Northern Red Hake landings are close to non-existent. The southern stock of Red Hake is evaluated through an even more bizarre overfishing definition that is survey-based, but it's sort of a two-tier method of evaluating recruitment and mean fish size through the survey. I'm just providing this graph to give you an idea of what is going on with the survey. This is just total survey catch over the time series. And in the southern area, it has gone down. Things have been pretty flat since about the early 1990s, yet generally much lower than the earlier part of the time series. And then just to give you something funny to look at, I figured I'd put the offshore hake graph up here. This is a species that we really don't know anything about. This is the species that really, if it's landed, it's usually landed in combination with whiting, so we don't have really a separate landings time series for offshore hake. The survey is extremely variable. This also is another stock that we evaluate based on mean fish weight and recruitment. And this just gives you an idea. I mean, this is mean fish weight and recruitment on the same graph. And really, I guess the point here is that it's all over the place, extremely variable, and makes it very difficult to really evaluate the status of the stock. This is also a stock that's thought to be distributed in deeper waters and may only be sampled, the fringes of the distribution of the stock may only be what's getting sampled in the survey. So a lot of unknowns here. The primary focus is on whiting and red hake, of course. Offshore hake is usually considered to be sort of part of whiting when we talk about the whiting fishery. Just very briefly, to give you an idea of the timeline that we're looking at on this amendment, I mean, the purpose today was just to give you an update of stock status. That's something that hasn't been done since the last stock assessment. And the first thing the PDT wanted to do was look at the last 2 years of survey data to really see where we were with the stocks. And of course, when we saw what those survey data looked like and what might be going on in the northern area with Silver Hake, there was enough concern that, you know, we wanted to bring it forward to the council and just put everybody on notice of what we're dealing with in this amendment. And really, we need to think about where we're going to focus our efforts in this amendment, because there's been a lot of talk about doing a lot of things. But we really have some pretty critical issues, I think, that need to be dealt with. The timeline for now, still somewhat optimistic, I think, is to as the executive committee has recommended, focus on limited access and approaches for TAC-based management between now and June, and then see what happens at the NIMS working group for data poor stocks. I have it listed here as occurring in June. We're hearing now that may be July. I'm not sure that that'll cause any further delay in the amendment, because the committee will have to get back together and finish up the alternatives after that meeting. Assuming we're successful in developing these alternatives, the council would approve the alternatives for analysis in the draft EIS at the September council meeting, and then approve the draft EIS at the January or February council meeting next year. once the DEIS is submitted and reviewed, the comment period starts. Public hearings based on that schedule would occur around April or May, and the council would be selecting final measures for this amendment in June of next year. So, again, that's best case scenario, and it looks out about 18 months to get this amendment completed. The only concerns that the PDT have, some of the concerns that the PDT have at this point is how to move forward with management of the Silver Hake stocks in such a way that we can prevent overfishing if it's occurring, and if it's not occurring, what can we do to manage these stocks and improve the biomass in the northern area? Thank you.
I mean, Mr. Chairman, before people ask Lori questions, I wanted to highlight a couple of things to preempt you, so to speak. In these figures with the updated stock information, you'll note that the survey information is in kilograms per tow, and it's the delta mean kilograms per tow. For all practical purposes, you should treat that as the mean or the average. Delta mean versus mean, it doesn't result in much of a difference in the values. It's a slightly different way of calculating an average or a mean. So don't be too distressed by the word delta. Also, for some of these stocks, such as the Southern Silver Hake, you might take note of the difference in the delta mean kilogram per tow values. If you just look at the figure itself, you might see high and low and trends, but for Southern Silver Hake, you can see that certainly within the last 15 years or so, the variation has been extremely small, 1 to maybe 0.5 kilogram per tow. Slightly different with the Silver Hake, Northern Silver Hake, where there's a bit more variation in the values from 1 year to the next. You can see on the y-axis, much different situation than we have with Southern Silver Hake. Lori may have already mentioned that with the offshore hake, we have hardly any variation at all. You know, we're up and down all over the place, and we're varying between 0.2, 2/10 of a kilogram per tow versus 1/2 a kilogram per tow. So those are considerations that the committee is going to have to deal with, and of course this council as well, once we get deeper into the development of all of these different management measures that relate in part to limiting access and making sure that we control fishing mortality to our threshold and targets. So, again, questions for Lori, Mr. Chairman?
Any questions for Lori or Dave? Okay. Jim Salisbury.
Well, I guess my, I don't know if there's exactly questions or comments, but we were asked to make our thoughts known as to whether the committee would proceed on the track of doing a limited entry and a management plan for these stocks. And after looking at these landing levels compared to the biomass levels, first of all, it seems like they're sort of independent of each other. They don't seem to have a lot of correlation. And in the case of the two different stocks, you've got, in the northern stock, you have almost de minimis landings. I mean, I don't know how you'd even figure out who's landing this, what would you use as a qualification amount to land almost no Silver Hake at all? How many people are involved in this fishery, or let me put it a different way, how many people would be eligible to vote on it if we're not going to get it done by June, July of 07, so how many people would be involved in voting on it if you were to do a limited entry program? So to me, it's just all these things are like, how to say it? It seems to be so far from appearing to be an urgent problem. I'm wondering why we are spending the kind of effort that would be involved in doing a limited access program under the present circumstances for these species. So could I have some comment on that?
Sure. I can't get too deep into the answers to your questions because you're highlighting for the benefit of the committee issues we need to attend to, such as low levels of landings and how might that affect our decision-making process as we go along. And, of course, low levels of landings have been caused by low price, lack of fish, many, many factors. I guess the best answer to your question, Jim, would be for you to reflect on the scoping document that we brought out to public hearing, because that scoping document was developed with this information in hand. And much of that, some of the concern regarding the need for us to move forward with limited entry is the continuing restrictive nature of our regulations in the groundfish fleet and concern that the groundfish fleet or a portion thereof may shift to whiting. Some of the trends that we have right now for northern silver hake, you take a look at the survey, three-year average fall survey relative to the target and the threshold, and you can see that we're, you know, right at the threshold, so we're, you know, very close to being overfished, or maybe we are overfished, Lori. I forget what you said regarding that. So we're very close. Yeah, we're very close. So, you know, a little bit of a tweak there. Things go wrong, and we'll be overfished. And so it's the status of the resource, as best we can judge it, from the data we have in hand, and concern that there may be a shift of effort into whiting by vessels that can get into the whiting fishery now because there's no limited access.
Jim?
Thank you, David. Well, you know, I think your comments just, I have reflected on them, not very deeply, obviously, but it seems to me with very little reflection, you can see how the fact that, well, in a species that has very low landings, and it's primarily because of price, I mean, nobody wants it. So why then do you limit entry for people to get in it when the fact is that the reason they're not landing is because they don't want it under the price circumstances? Sure, prices can change, and then the phenomenon, well, maybe people would see it as a viable alternative to ground fishing. Mightn't that be a good thing? It might not be for the one or two people that have landed it in the past and would be therefore now the limited entry class. But it seems to me that this is somewhat similar to the scallop fishery thing, where if there's no scalloping going on in the Gulf of Maine area, then, hey, you know, we had this whole discussion about what happens if scallops come back, and are you going to limit people out of something that they've always had as a fishery in their area, but they didn't prosecute it because it wasn't there, and now it's back, but somebody else inherited it along the way. So I think all of these problems that we've had in the past in scallops are right here now. It's the same issue we got all over again. Would you have a limited entry program that develops access for maybe the few people who have some interest in it under the present circumstances, and how they kind of inherit the fishery of the whole range of the coast if it should come back in other areas? So, I mean, to me, these are difficult issues to deal with, and when you add that on top of the requirements that the Magnuson Act has now imposed on us and the effort that would go into doing that, for what perceived benefit would we do this relative to other fisheries, I find it hard to justify why we would pursue this sort of more difficult task in doing an amendment in that sort. So I don't see why we are so interested in spending that much effort on something with so little pressing need at the present time. Thank you.
Lori?
Yes, just to provide a little bit of background to address Jim's question, this is something, the limited access aspect of this amendment is something that this council has wanted for a long time, and certainly the industry has wanted for a long time. We did a limited access program in Amendment 12 back in 1997. I did it, and it was not approved ultimately in the amendment, but this council has intended for 10 years now to develop limited access in this fishery. It's also one of the few remaining open access fisheries in New England, and I think that the industry has spoken in favor of limited access many times. I've been a little out of the loop with the whiting industry lately, but I assume that most of the industry is still generally supportive of a limited access program. And I think one of the reasons for that is because whiting's always been a niche fishery. It's been a somewhat of a specialized kind of thing, market-driven, and a lot of people who have been involved in the whiting fishery have depended on it greatly in the past and have a lot of concerns about some of the opportunities that they may be losing or have lost in this fishery for various reasons. A lot of those people who may not be landing fish this year or last year may have been landing fish in previous years and may certainly want to have the opportunity to do so in the future. In addition, with such limited information and with such an inconsistency between what we're seeing in the survey and what we're seeing in the fishery, it's going to be very hard to develop management measures to address an overfishing problem, if you will, in the northern area. I think that a lot of people would perceive a benefit to a limited access program in that respect. If nothing more than just to prevent excess capacity from entering the fishery, I think that a limited access program could actually be considered a good first step towards getting a better management program in the northern area to help the status of the resource, too.
Dave Gathel.
Yeah, actually, I think, Jim, I think you may have argued, you've argued for one position and inadvertently answered your question and come all the way around to the other. And that is that you have a fishery with relatively low landings and relatively few participants that hasn't thrived. You know, these stock numbers should go off the chart under those conditions, and it hasn't. So that would tend to indicate that virtually any entry into the fishery is going to drive it into an overfished condition very rapidly. It just barely kind of limping along at the level it's at now. I would argue strongly that now is the time for limited entry, this is clearly a fishery that won't be able to take increased effort. It just about supports the effort it has now. And by waiting until you have too much effort, you're going to need the same kind of draconian measures that we've had to apply to a number of fisheries over the years because we waited too long to deal with it. I personally think there are reasons why silver hake haven't thrived in the northern area. And I don't think they're fishing related. But they are issues that we can't do anything about. Not directly, anyway. I mean, the only thing we can limit is fishing. As an example, in Fishes of the Gulf of Maine, the new one, the predators of silver hake are listed, in addition to silver hake, they eat each other. They're not kind of nasty little critters. A partial list of fishes that eat silver hake includes spiny dogfish, number one. Gee, we got plenty of them. So how are these hake going to rebuild when every time they start to swim, somebody bites their tail off? Little skate, we got plenty of them. Goosefish, pollock, cod, haddock, spotted red and white hakes, Cadian redfish, sea raven, bluefish, mackerel, swordfish, and flounders. In addition, they're also common prey of harbor porpoises. So everybody wants to eat a silver hake. And it may be that our natural mortality, as we rebuild these other stocks, or in some cases have over-rebuilt some of these stocks, that we've driven predation of silver hake through the roof. And, I think there's an ecosystem management consideration here that we may not be able to bring silver hake to a very high level as long as we have high levels of their principal predators. So all of these argue, to me, for limited access into this fishery, given the fact that we can't control any of the other variables.
Yeah, we did scoping. The council decided to go forward with limited access and various other alternatives and options in the document, and that's what we're doing right now. Lori, I had a question on your presentation. Silver Hake status. I guess it was the third slide you showed. The next one. So is the discards are estimated around 4,000 metric tons a year for that period, 01 through 04. Are those discards in the whiting fishery?
No, those are discards across all fisheries. It was a discard analysis that was done in the stock assessment based on limited observer data, but using the same method as was used, I believe, for dogfish, with the discard to kept ratios broken down by gear type and target species.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Pierce.
Now, David covered the points I wanted to make, so there's no sense in me continuing.
Lori?
I'm sorry, just to add to the answer to that question, if I'm recalling correctly, trawl fisheries targeting whiting were number one in the discards.
All right, anything else, Dave? Anyone in the audience want to comment on the presentation? Okay, thanks, Dave. Sorry, Jim. Didn't see you.
Not a problem. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wanted to make the council aware of some of the discussions that took part at the committee level that I think provide some answers to some of Jim's concerns about what happens if we develop a limited access program based on landings in the last, say, 5 or 10 year period. What happens to areas, not only the Gulf of Maine, but the New Jersey Bight, or North Carolina, for example, that have had years of very high production of silver hake. And the discussion at the committee level was that you could consider this an emerging fishery and be creative enough to allow access to that fishery by local participants at whatever level. Let's just use North Carolina as an example. If the fishery redeveloped, and it was a very, very significant fishery with a very high poundage. It didn't go consecutively for 9 years, but it was like three-year periods. Nobody knows where the fish came from. Nobody knows where they went. But if that were to happen again, if you didn't have some kind of a consideration for access to that resource by local non-permitted boats, in other words, you would have to create an emergent fishery permit to allow specific boats or a local fleet to fish them. At the same time, allowing existing permitted holders to go down there at any time to fish them. But those permitted boats for that area would not be allowed to go to the Georges Bank, for example, an existing fishery. It's new thinking, but it's what we got to be looking at, because sooner or later, this global warming thing is going to turn right around, bite everybody in the ass. And the fish are going to reappear where they did 50 and 100 years ago. And if you're not creative enough to put some forethought in that and build in some mechanisms that at least allow for some way to compensate for that, you're going to be in trouble. So the committee at some length discussed this, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Chairman, Dr. Pierce, was emergent fisheries, I think, was the title we ended up with. And it might resolve some of Mr. Salisbury's concerns about areas that have not the resource available to them then. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Jimmy's quite correct. He's given us a brief summary of some of those relevant committee discussions. And I'll remind the council that at our last meeting, we did have quite prolonged discussion regarding qualification criteria, the years that we should include, and the council was quite clear in its direction that it at least wants to begin by making sure that we do include years for qualification that would enable us to deal with those fishermen who might have lost access to the resource either because of the geographic shift in the range or, you know, for other reasons that would, you know, limit their activity in smallmouth fisheries. So it was good that Jimmy raised that, and it's a nice reminder that, you know, we will be, as we develop this amendment, focusing on qualification criteria that are sensitive to those particular concerns.
Okay, thank you. Paul?
I was going to say, there's nothing in the Magnuson Act, once you have limited entry, say we do limited entry and there's, you know, 50 boats, and all of a sudden the conditions come up and you say those 50 boats are making a gazillion dollars. There's nothing that prohibits the council from then saying, okay, we're going to establish a lottery or an auction or anything for the next 2 years, or allow, you know, I mean, we can do anything once those circumstances appear. There's nothing that a limited entry program you can't change.
Anything else? Thanks, Lori. Thank you, Dr. Pierce. Okay. Trawl Survey Committee report.